This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moss Cowain. For more than 10 years, Ben Hamper spent his days on the assembly line at the General Motors plant in Flint, Michigan. He assumed he'd be there for life, just as his father and grandfather had been. But Hamper discovered he had another talent. After work, he began jotting down observations about life on the line. And when he sent a record review to the local alternative paper, they printed it. Turns out the editor was Michael Moore, who would go on to direct the GM-bashing film Roger and Me. Moore felt that the review was so wonderfully sick, he offered Hamper his own weekly column. Impressions of a Rivethead, named for one of Hamper's jobs on the line, became one of the most popular columns in the Flint Voice. I spoke with Hamper last summer, after his tales from the assembly line were published in the book Rivethead. Rivethead has just been released in paperback. Here's Hamper reading from the first chapter.
I was 7 years old the first time I ever set foot inside an automobile factory. The occasion was family night at the old Fisher Body Plant in Flint, where my father worked a second shift. General Motors provided this yearly intrusion as an opportunity for the kin of the workforce to funnel in and view their fathers, husbands, uncles, and granddads as they toiled away on the assembly line. If nothing else, this annual peep show lent a whole world of credence to our father's daily grumble. The assembly line did indeed stink. The noise was very close to intolerable. The heat was one complete bastard. Little wonder the old man's socks always smelled like liverwurst bleached for a week in the desert sun. For my mother, it was at least one night out of the year when she could verify the old man's whereabouts. One night a year when she could be reasonably assured that my father wasn't lurching over a pool table at the patio lounge or pickling his gizzard at any one of the thousand beer joints out on Dort Highway. My father loved his drink. He wasn't nearly as fond of labor.
You write that before visiting the automobile plant, you thought that your father built cars all by himself. When you first saw an assembly line, what was your reaction?
Actually, I was quite terrified because I'd never seen anything like this. It was so huge and enormous and noisy and filthy that I actually felt, sorry for my father. You know, I just assumed that he went to some glitzy little garage and, you know, built the cars out of kits or something, you know.
So what you saw then was a real glimpse into...
My future.
Into your future, your father's present and your future.
Mm-hmm.
What did GM do to make families, or to try to make families, feel part of the company?
Not much, I guess, you know. Once a year, I think they let the families come through. And, of course, they were all under the umbrella of the wonderful GM benefits package. But... Otherwise, I don't really know what else they did.
Was GM able to create some kind of identity or even a sense of loyalty for the people that worked there?
In Flint, Michigan, certainly, yes. It was a family tradition, you know. I'm a fourth-generation shop rat, or was. And it was just handed down from, you know, generation to generation. Your father would get you an application once you got out of high school, and you'd sign up, and it was just like going in the Army, you know. Well, except you went in for 30 years.
It was the only game in town, too, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. In Flint, if you don't work for GM, I mean, you pump gas, or you flip burgers, or you just sit by railroad tracks and, you know, watch the sun come up and go down.
You describe being part of this generation of shop rats, your father, your grandfather, aunts and uncles, and a whole extended family. How did you resist General Motors?
How did I resist it initially?
Yes.
Well, I got out of high school, and I was just bound and determined. I thought, you know, I was very cynical, and I had this naive belief that, I was somehow talented and you could do more than just put a screw in a hole. And so I wasted about 3 prime earning years with that belief in near poverty before I realized that I was kidding myself. And I was paying in apartments for like minimum wage, and I already had a wife and daughter, and it came time to pay the bills. And so I, I opted to sign on the dotted line.
When you first started working for General Motors, you were assigned to the cab shop, which was known as the jungle. Can you describe what it was like, your first day on the job?
It was very terrifying. They led us up to the jungle, which is on the second floor, where they do all the welding on the cab bodies. And there's sparks shooting everywhere in every direction. And people are MIG welding and spot welding and brazing. Just lots of heat, noise, fire, and, you know, the overall claustrophobia of all these wires hanging down and huge cables looping everywhere. It was just, to me, a horrific scene. And I remember that first day I hired in, I said, well, what I'll do is I'll make it to the end of this shift, and then it's bye-bye. I'm going to look for something else. Maybe I can still become a disc jockey or something.
You describe the noise, and you say it's like it was like some hideous, unrelenting tape loop of trains having sex. I almost know what you're talking about when you write that.
I like that line. If you really think of it, that's what it was like. Imagine trains having sex, you know, if you can possibly imagine that. Going on for like 8 hours a day, and that's about what it was like.
I noticed, too, on your first day on the job that the foreman or the overseer called you boys. Was that what bosses called workers, boys?
Some did. This guy happened to. I didn't take any personal affront to the thing. Sometimes they called you. Well, I can't say it here. Is this a family radio show? I mean, everything from... A lot of times they referred to us as bodies. I didn't like that. Like some department would be short a few workers on a Friday because guys didn't come into work on Friday or something, and the foreman would shout out, hey, we need a couple bodies over in, the axle line. I thought, ooh, bodies. Hmm.
You didn't think of yourself as a body.
Well, and when I think of a body, I think of a cadaver, And of course, a lot of us, felt like cadavers in there sometimes.
Ben Hamper is my guest, and he worked on the GM assembly line and has written a book about those years, and they were from 1977 to 1988. The book is called Rivethead, Tales from the Assembly Line. Reading about your book, it sort of reminded me a little bit of what you also seem to describe as your Catholic education.
Yeah, there's similarities.
Can you tell us more about that, those similarities?
Jeez. Well, outside of the fact that, I never swallowed a lot of the stuff that the nuns crammed down my throat, and I never swallowed a lot of the hokey bunkum that a lot of the supervisors like to cram down our throat. That was probably the biggest, parallel.
So you never went for it?
No. It was actually demeaning at times. I write about our in-plant mascot. They actually dreamt up a mascot for us, which was this, 5'6" gigantic kitty cat named Howie Make'em. And it was a guy in a cat suit with a large, huge, enormous cat head with whiskers and a cape with a Q on it that stood for quality. And he'd romp around, come down the aisles, just like, it was a football game back in junior high, And that kind of stuff was just preposterous and demeaning after a while. We ran with the joke at first, but, when we thought about it after a while, we said, oh, my God, this is what they think of us, that we're just these zombie nitwits, that can only relate to, cartoon character figures or something.
After working in the cab shop, you went to the rivet line, and you said that it kind of got into your blood. You got a certain satisfaction out of doing the rivets. Tell us what you did.
Well, I had a couple different jobs down there, but they both revolved around riveting pieces of equipment onto the frame. But I just had this sick fascination with rivets and riveting. I enjoyed it. I really did. I enjoyed the feel of the rivet gun. It was powerful and strong, and I just became so proficient with it that I could twirl it and make it do everything I wanted, and it was just like a third arm to me. And I really prided myself on being probably the best riveter in the world, and hence one day I realized I was the quintessential shop rat and the greatest riveter in the world, and I so deemed myself Rivet Head. This all happened in the span of about 30 seconds, and there were no news bulletins about the occasion at all.
And hence the name of your book, of course.
Yes.
You also write about watching the clock. I mean, the almost the torture of watching the clock during the day. How did it haunt you, just the passage of time?
Oh, it would just crawl because, they'd have clocks stationed everywhere. I think it was just sort of a sadistic gesture on GM's part to put all these clocks everywhere. And if you got in the habit of doing your job and then sitting down waiting for the next job to come and staring at that clock, you would swear that thing was not moving, not budging, and time would go so slow. I've often said, and I'd like to repeat here, that my main gripe was not with GM, as with their clocks, as with the clock. That was our enemy. It wasn't General Motors. General Motors, they were culprits in a lot of stupid buffoonery, but those clocks were our main enemies, and making them move was our goal each day through any kind of diversion we could think up.
Would you have been better off without a clock?
Certainly, I think so. I mean, most guys wore watches anyway, but at least with the watch you could sort of control it. I can remember, I will not look at my watch, for what I think will be an hour. And then I would think an hour would pass, and I'd look at my watch, and like 9 minutes passed, and I would go, oh, my God.
Ben Hamper is my guest, and he's written a book called Rivethead, Tales from the Assembly Line. It's about his years as a shop rat, an auto worker on the assembly line at General Motors Truck and Bus Plant in Flint, Michigan. We're going to take a short break. This is Fresh Air. Ben Hamper is my guest. His book is called Rivethead, Tales from the Assembly Line. When did you begin to write for the Flint Voice?
I believe somewhere around 1980, 1981.
And it was Michael Moore that...
Michael Moore, he was the editor of the paper, and we had met, and we became friendly. And at first, I wasn't writing at all about the shop, but he kept edging me in that direction, always telling me that he thought that would be a very, very good thing in this town in Flint, Michigan. People would be interested in, and I resisted. But finally, I gave in. I started writing the column called Impressions of a Rivet Head biweekly, and it proved to be probably the most popular thing in the paper and generated more mail and everything else than anything else. So we stuck with it, Mama didn't raise no dunce, I just, grabbed the golden udders and kept them milking,
You had an ongoing... or an open-ended invitation to Roger Smith, who was head of General Motors, to go bowling with you. Were you truly serious?
Oh, yeah. I really was. To me, and I still don't understand GM completely, they have no sense of humor or anything. They would pipe up all the time about how management and the workers had to come closer together to smash down these walls of animosity, and we're all one team and this and that. And so here I am extending in my column quite often the invitation for Roger Smith and me to go bowling some Friday night, like say a guy would at a gas station with his boss, just to prove, and this would have gotten just incredible PR. I can imagine all the networks there to see, and I was offering, no one else was offering to do this, so I took it on myself, the Rivet Head, bowling with Roger Smith, and it'd be a very friendly thing, and, no wagering. We would just, he'd drink his scotch, and I'd drink my pitcher of beer, and, it didn't matter who would win, It wasn't a challenge, like, hey, we can beat you, We represent the workers, and we represent, management. But they never followed through, but then again, They're always known for shooting themselves in the foot.
What do you think Roger Smith and others' idea then of developing this sense of purpose and comradeship? How did they do it? Was it just these once a year kind of family invitations to the factory? Or did they have other things that they did too?
I'm not aware of any other things they did, no. A story I do have, show you sort of where Roger was at with his relationship to his, you know, millions of underlings. One day, he was scheduled to come to our plant, the Flint Truck and Bus Assembly Plant, to view these new military vehicles. We had just finished the first batch of them, and he was going to show them off to some admirals or some generals or something. And everyone was very excited by the fact that he was going to show up that day, and we thought, you know, he'll probably be walking down the aisle with bodyguards and waving, and we were all quite excited. We were going to see the head honcho, you know, the chairman of the board, B-O-R-E-D. And sure enough, like 3 hours into the shift, the foreman came around informing us that we were all being sent home. And I asked the foreman why, and he says, well, no particular reason. I said, well, is there a shortage of parts? Is there a breakdown? No, no. We're just sending you home today. And then it dawned on me finally that they were sending us all home so Roger wouldn't be polluted with the sight of all of us shop rats, you know, dirtying up the atmosphere. I really took umbrage, and I was really, really angry about the whole situation after that, and I wrote about it because, you know, what was a factory without factory workers? How did trucks get assembled without assemblers? And what they were doing was kicking us out so when Roger came through the plant, it would all be sterile and quiet, you know. Not a real factory.
How would you improve things there? What would you do?
I don't know. I don't know. I think I would have a system where the jobs got rotated so people weren't stuck on the same job for years and years and years, you know, and just, you know, rotted away on these things. And a guy couldn't just keep one job that was really good while his neighbor worked his butt off three times as hard and got paid the same amount of money. I would rotate jobs like every 6 months, you know. And I'd also smash the walls down and put in windows.
There are no windows?
No, there are no windows, you know. And you never tell if it was day or night or raining or sunny, you know. And I remember a couple times they had tornadoes go by and we didn't even know about it. We'd get out of the shop and, you know, it's so noisy in there, you know. We'd turn on the radio driving home and, yes, the tornado that went right through near the GM truck and bus plant 4 hours ago. We're going, what? Tornado? So that was the noise up on the roof, huh?
Ben Hamper is my guest. His book is called Rivethead, Tales from the Assembly Line. It's about his years working on the assembly line at the General Motors Truck and Bus Plant in Flint, Michigan. You had a nervous breakdown. Is that right?
I wouldn't
Would
class,
you call it that?
No.
What would you call it?
I had a series of very severe panic disorder episodes.
What do you think they were caused by?
To this day, I have no idea. You know, it came out of the clear blue, and I'm sure they were exacerbated by my... is that the right word? Oh.
I think
that's
so.
That's like a five-syllable word. Wow. I think they were exacerbated by my working at GM because it lends itself to a very claustrophobic environment. And like I said earlier, the shot began to wear on my nerves. People seemed stacked, you know, too close together. There were no windows. It was so noisy, you know, and I just got this feeling of suffocation after a while. And one night it all broke loose on me. It was just an average shift, and I was on break, and I was reading the sports page, and everything just went totally crazy. My heart went beating crazy. My arms tingled and my legs tingled. My vision went all to hell. And I immediately left the plant. And a few days later, saw a doctor when this started to reoccur and was soon put in a mental health clinic where you saw me and Roger and me, and was diagnosed as having panic disorder.
When was the last time you had one?
About 4 minutes ago. No. When they told me I couldn't have another cigarette. No, I don't know. I still have anxiety attacks and stuff. A full-blown panic attack, it's been a while, a couple months, you know. But, you know, I don't blame this. I don't put this at the foot of GM because I would also experience these things like in shopping centers, mm-hmm. at red lights, standing in line to buy razor blades. So.
You left GM, but I wonder how much you've been able to get it out of your system.
It's been difficult because I had planned to work there. Of course, I'd be laid off anyway, as it turns out. But, I had planned to, I had a good thing going. You know, I was making good money. And I had just gotten remarried, so I obviously needed money. And, it was entwined with the thing I was starting to love, my hobby, this writing thing. So I had so much vested in returning to GM. But I was just unable to do it. And finally, the doctor that I was seeing just disallowed it, said, look, you've had it. I'm not going to send you back there anymore. And it was just sort of a farewell to arms and legs and toes and, you know, all the things that get chopped off in rivet guns.
Can you make a living on your writing? Is that where you're putting your energies now?
Yeah. I don't know how to do anything else. Not that I know how to write, but I think I did a good job on Rivethead. It's generating a lot of response, positive reviews, and hopefully that will lead to another book contract that we're already discussing.
So you're not a shop rat, you're a writer now?
Yeah, unfortunately. I like to do both, but I can't. So.
Well, I thank you very much, Ben Hamper, for joining us today on Fresh Air.
I've had fun. It's been a privilege.
Ben Hamper's new book is called Rivethead, Tales from the Assembly Line. I'm Marty Moscowain, and this is Fresh Air.